Welcome to the Flame Podcast, spreading truth like wildfire with your flamethrowers Anna Kane and Nicole Orozco on a mission to set the captives free. Now here they are, your hosts.
Hi everyone, welcome to episode number 23. Can you believe it? We have a great show, as always, lined up for you. And for more information about the Flame Podcast and the Flame Paper, make sure to visit us at theflameusa.com. Super important, theflameusa.com. Don't forget to subscribe to the show at podomatic.com, or you can download the Podomatic app so you won't miss a single episode. Now, we're starting out the show, as always, with Watchmen on the Wall. We do cover the latest events and happenings. Now, we're going to say this one more time. We're super excited. The Reawaken America tour is coming next month to the Idaho-Washington border. And it's September 16th and 17th, and the Flame will be there. We'll be there with papers. We'll be there in the media room interviewing. We'll be all over the event. So come say hi.
We're probably going to talk about this event more than one more time.
Go all the way up until we're there. We're getting together packages of all our issues and doing some fun stuff. So stay tuned. But you could get tickets now, and they really do sell out quick. So call 918-851-0102. I think you could text it as well. Or go to timetofreeamerica.com and do mention Flame promo code. That's FLAME promo code. Now, we're also doing a special edition in September, and it's coming together nicely. Clay Clark is the headline article, and I'll give you a little hint. It's the equation to end America. That's all I'm going to say. It's an equation, though. So try to look up his podcast and see what you think it might be. And we have articles from Dr. Tenpenny, Maureen McDonald, the MAM Collaborative Committee, wrote an article, Ohio Brett, and just James Grunvig. So there's a lot of content in there, a lot more than that. So it's very, very exciting.
Get your subscriptions. Tell five people to get subscriptions and tell those five people to call five people to get their subscriptions and get the word out.
It's not just the paper. We're funding good. We're a ministry.
Yep.
We are a ministry. We're a nonprofit ministry. We are not allowed to keep the money. We have to give it back. I mean, we're allowed to keep some money to be able to keep going and get employees and hire people and do things like that. But we have to give back. So, you know, we already had Ohio Brett last week, but that was a good time. So I want to throw a shout out to him for just being him, you know. So
he's pretty amazing. Hosting him was fun. He definitely, when people say like, oh, I'm traveling the 50 states and I'm funding good, to actually be with him for 2 days and cold calling high schools, like he literally just walks up and knocks on the door and asks to speak to some, you know, a principal or the athletic director and chats with them so he can, you know, try to get in there and speak Jesus to students. So it was a pretty cool time. He's definitely working hard from the time he wakes up till the time he goes to bed.
And our schools are the belly of the beast. There's a lot of good teachers and directors, so but it's the belly of the beast. So he walks into the belly to encourage kids. Now, the biggest thing I've been noticing all week is Yuval Noah Harari. Gosh, this dude, like, is he the false prophet or is he just wanting to be the false prophet?
Or I'm not Satan in himself.
I think the Satan has to, I've been watching, I think he's going to be something anyway, but yeah, it's all leading up to that. But he actually says the nature of money is going to change dramatically. The old systems of ownership will have to adapt radically. So with that,
well, I've been doing a little research. We're gonna be talking about a couple things, digital currency, IRS and stuff, and I've done a little research for the show. What if people haven't been noticing, the U.S. dollar will no longer be the world's currency as we know it. With Russia, China, and others forming partnerships, they're saying we want a currency that's actually backed by, well, assets, as in gold, silver, bullion, wheat, whatever it happens to be. They want something tied to something solid. United States has been working off of petrodollars, which formed back in the 70s when we went off the gold standard. And the gold standard was what everybody went. Nixon said, well, we can't do this anymore. He pulled it. It wasn't him. He just did it on behalf of the bankers. And then they used the petrodollar, which is oil. So the price of oil index is what basically the value of your dollar is. Mm-hmm. Well, now that Russia's the big kahuna in the oil industry over in that area and all of Europe buys them.
By plan.
Well, and it is what it is. And that really our kingdom, our empire, the powers to be, the guys at the top, are pushing hard to end our kingdom, our empire, and move it on over to China.
Well, now, think about if goods are the way we're going to survive and China does most of the manufacturing,
yes.
Hello, they are going to have all the resources.
And whose dollar are they going to base things on?
Mm-hmm.
Are they going to base it on the United States or are they going to come in with a ruble or something else?
The yen.
That is all in play right now. We're going through a tremendous transformation of the world. The COVID scam was their way of trying to dump in $10 trillion to keep the machine going, pay off assets, buy up, put us in more debt. But the bottom line is it won't work in the long run. So there's all these things happening. And I am like, I know little,
but
I'm a pea brain in this.
Let me ask you this,
yeah.
Steve, since you've been doing your research, I see. What is executive order 14067, because that goes more into the digital currency.
Right. Well, according to Wiki, of all things, it's already there. Executive Order 14067, officially titled Ensuring Responsible Development of Digital Assets, was signed on March 9th, 2022, in the 83rd executive order signed by U.S. President Joe Biden. The Telios of the order is to develop digital assets in a responsible manner. The executive order addressed the potential national security implications of cryptocurrencies. Now, I want to let you think about this for a moment. You cannot go on and become a stockbroker without garnering a license. You cannot sell life insurance without garnering a license. You cannot sell real estate without garnering a license. You cannot practice medicine without garnering a license. The cryptocurrency world has been pretty wide open. Well, just like banks are regulated, financial institutions are regulated, they want to regulate
the
digital currencies.
Let me jump in. Paragraph 4. Okay, so the language, when you read it, you're like, huh? You know, it. Okay, so they're going to change it to a centralized digital currency. But
who's going to do this centralized currency?
Well, the Federal Reserve, I believe, or a central bank. But let me get the language in this. The language in this has applications where they can turn it off because it has key words in there that if you're not doing something that you should be doing, they could just shut your money off. And so let's say we're having a podcast and let's say we got invited to Tennessee to do a podcast. They decide they don't like that podcast, they'll just shut the money off. So that's the scary part of this. China.
That goes into the social credit kind of thing,
mm-hmm.
and all that. But that's for another discussion.
Right.
We could spend a whole show on that.
Well, the Flame Podcast, our goal for the Flame Podcast is to make it a top performer within the political podcast category. We really do need your help to do this. It's as simple as sharing the show with 10 of your friends, you know, and also share the paper with 10 of your friends. Go to theflameusa.com and do both. Go get it. Get a link. Share it. And speaking of sharing, we do have a phenomenal guest coming up. So exciting.
Welcome to our Torchbearer segment, where we interview people who are carrying the torch of truth and making a positive difference in our world. This week, we have Dr. Pam Popper, founder of WellnessForumHealth.com and MakeAmericaFreeAgain.com, and co-author of the new explosive book, COVID Operation, What Happened, What Is Happened, and What's Next. Welcome, Pam. We're so grateful and excited to have you on today.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
Thank you. So we always like to have our guests kind of introduce themselves, share kind of a background, so that when we start getting into the meat and potatoes, people are aware you know what you're doing. So if you could give us a quick background about you, that would be absolutely wonderful.
Yeah, I'll give you a thumbnail sketch. So I started a healthcare company 27 years ago called Wellness Forum Health. And our practice specialty, if you will, we invented it. It's called informed medical decision making. And during the last 27 years, we've been helping consumers learn to evaluate risks of benefits of everything from a supplement that you might take to a diet you adopt to drugs and procedures and tests and that sort of thing. And our members generally consume about two-thirds less medical services than the average person out there. They don't get hurt as much as well. Mm-hmm. And along the way, I've created about 3,600 hours of programming. I've written several books, one of which was on the New York Times list for 67 weeks, I think it was. Been in a lot of documentaries. I've written 1,500 plus articles, referenced articles on everything from kidney stones to stage 4 cancer. And with all that, I got a very good opportunity to investigate how really bad our healthcare system is in spite of what we spend on it and how much fraud goes on. And so I feel like I've been in training for this whole mess for the whole entirety of my career. And including having investigated and reported on fake pandemics in the past and medical practices that were more harmful than helpful and et cetera. So in March of 2020, when this all started, it took me a couple of days to figure out what was going on. The second week of March, I put out a very controversial video. I said this was a fake pandemic. They'd done it before. 2009 was a worldwide fake pandemic took place. I explained that China was behind it, gave the reasons why, and predicted that forced vaccination would be the end game. And so here we are, and I was right. I wish I had been wrong. In terms of doing something about it, we debated about that for a long time in my office, probably a different discussion for a different day, but we had some involvement in the Freedom from Medical Tyranny movement or health freedom movement many, many years ago, and found it a very frustrating experience. And so if we were going to get involved in this again, it was going to have to be ignoring and leaving behind strategies that have never worked and forging a new path. Mm-hmm. And my gang, and I can't do this without my building full of people on board, it's just too much to take on for an individual person. So everybody was on board, provided we were going to do stuff that worked and be in it to win it. And that's how we started Make Americans Free Again back in the summer of 2020. So our website's MakeAmericansPluralFreeAgain.com. You can learn a lot more about us there. And our concept from the get-go was a two-tiered approach to dealing with the problem. One was meetings in person at the local level to restore society and work on societal issues that affect us all, like getting kids out of these failing schools and community gardens and where to go mask-free and saving small businesses and et cetera. And then the big idea, raise hundreds of millions of dollars and file lawsuits and get our rights back and teach the bad guys a lesson, make them pay for what they did so this never happens again. So that's the thumbnail sketch.
Well, this is Nicole, Dr. Popper, and I just think you are brilliant, first of all. And I was watching you, and I just see the so many aspects of what we do with our paper. You're working on hands-on with the legal, with the medical, with the schools, and you also then have your wellness practice. I don't know how you do it, but I was watching you on a video about systems and about getting new systems in place and about a football. How football's organized and the medical system is just kind of a free-for-all. 90% of the journals are wrong. Can you tell me how we could create better systems in our country and how we can move forward out of this tyranny?
Yeah, well, it's a lot to unpack there, but let's talk first of all about medicine. I'm writing another book right now that doesn't have a working title yet, but essentially the theme of the book is nothing that happened since March of 2020 is new. It's just a bigger version of what's been going on and escalating for decades, right? And so medicine has ignored evidence in the interest of profits, and bad medical education contributes to it. Doctors who are remarkably uncurious about things, including they just seem to have an unlimited ability to watch people get worse instead of better and keep doing the same thing anyway. And you mentioned medical journals. The journal's editors are admitting, Richard Horton, who's editor of The Lancet, says, we print, I'm paraphrasing, he says, we print garbage. Marcia Angel, former editor of New England Journal of Medicine, says that you can't trust what's in the medical journals anymore. And it's been that way for a long time. So having said that, you don't want to throw the baby out with the bathwater, because to suggest that you can't get to the bottom of and conclude or make right conclusions from things would also be incorrect. So when I started my business 27 years ago, we basically said, look, we have to bring some order to this. When you play football, you don't just watch people run up and down the field for an hour with a football and then try to figure out who won. You have rules of the game, and the quarters are 15 minutes always. And the first down is always 10 yards. And if you're going to kick a field goal, it always has to go between those two posts, right? So at the end of thousands of football games played in a season, you might have a squabble about a play or two or five or seven, but you have thousands of games, and it's really clear who won the game. There's not a lot of dispute about it. So we established those rules for looking at medical information. Things like, considering conflicts of interest, ignoring information and studies that show statistical significance, but they're clinically meaningless. I mean, if I tell you I have an intervention that's going to reduce your risk of a heart attack by 0.7%, you're probably not going to listen once you know that, right? It's ridiculous. Why would you take any risk for a 0.7% reduction in a risk of a heart attack? So we did that, and that's how we built our company. And during this 27 years we've been in business, we've never really had anybody want to take us on and argue about the conclusions that we publish, because who wants to go public and say, I don't think that conflicts of interest matter, and personally I think stuff that's statistically significant but clinically useless is terrific. Nobody's going to publicly say that. So having said that, we've applied that same set of filters, if you will, to all the COVID stuff, and you come up with very clear answers. Search the medical journals for some evidence that staying 6 feet away from people during flu season solves anything. There isn't any. The medical literature is the preponderance of the evidence shows that the masks are virtually useless and mostly harmful. The vaccine, same thing. You can arrive at correct conclusions. And so I've been talking about this since 2020. I find it very interesting that this week the White House czar actually admitted, COVID-19 czar actually admitted that the 6 feet of social distance was not supported by any evidence. And Scott Gottlieb, who was head of the FDA for a while, said that how that came about was CDC wanted 10 feet, no evidence for it, and the Trump administration negotiated it down to 6 feet. I mean, the scientific rigor just takes your breath away, doesn't it? But you think about all the time people spent standing on circles and standing in line outside because you couldn't have so many people in the store because everybody had to be far apart. I mean, this was absolute lunacy that was inflicted upon the population.
Not even just standing on those circles, but the amount of fighting and arguing and just thinking, looking at somebody thinking they're going to kill you, the thought right. process behind all of that.
Well, that was very purposeful, by the way. I don't know that they were smart enough to think about how 6 feet of distance would make people fight with one another, but turning people against one another, mm-hmm. I think, was a strategy that was well thought out as far as this was concerned, particularly on the vaccinated versus unvaccinated issue. And the reason I say that is that you would have to be one heck of an ignoramus to not understand that that's what Hitler did in the lead up to World War II. He basically convinced German people most of the German people actually, that Jews were carriers of typhus. They needed to be locked up in ghettos, and eventually that narrative shifted to these were bad people, and for the interest of society, they needed to be gotten rid of. So, and Hitler wasn't the first person who did it. I mean, this for your health is a term that's used by criminals and despots all over the world. It's been used for hundreds and hundreds of years. So, to a certain extent, they knew what they were doing, or they're so remarkably ignorant and stupid that they should not have their jobs. And either way, it's terrible either way, whichever conclusion you reach.
Yeah, for sure. It is terrible either way. And I think even more terrible that people were ignorant enough to follow along and do things anyway, knowing that it was wrong. I mean, I don't know. I talk about common sense a lot. It was so common sense that 6 feet wouldn't work. It was so common sense that the masks weren't going to work. All of it was so common sense. To think that Americans can be overtaken that quickly is just mind-boggling. It's scary. It really is scary to see how fast an entire country could be taken over.
Right. Well, there are good reasons for that, and it was also quite predictable. If you read my book, The COVID Operation, I said there were four things that had to be in place for this to take place. One is you have to have a medical system filled with sycophants who don't think and are willing to do whatever they're told to do, mm-hmm. and which has a very tight and financially motivated partnership with the government. I mean, the drug companies pay the government, the FDA, billions of dollars a year to review their products. And I hope you're sitting down, because this will shock you, but the approval rate's about 20% right now, or about 100% of what they submit. There's by 2015, I think it was 96%. Last year it was 100%. So you've got a government that is bloated and has taken on responsibility for and rulemaking and lawmaking. These people are all writing their own laws. And yeah. I mean, Congress has abdicated, the state legislatures have abdicated. So you've got a bloated government, power hungry, and which has grabbed more power than it's entitled to have. You have a medical system filled with sycophants, and there are some good people, don't misunderstand, but generally speaking, sycophants who will do anything that they're told to do in the interest of money. Corrupt media, and here's the most important part, an education system that has been turning out idiots for decades now. And even looking at, I had written about this even before the fake pandemic started, the idea that at a college you have to have a safe room where college students can go play with dolls in case somebody says something on campus they disagree with is insane. I mean, it's just really insane.
Yeah,
I'm 65 years old, and I hate to sound like I'm older than Methuselah, but when I was a kid, if you disagreed with something, they'd tell you to go write a paper on it and turn it in and make an argument, right? Now you got to go eat jelly beans and M&Ms and play with dolls until you feel better. So we're turning out morons. I watched something last night that you'll find interesting. This guy was just interviewing students on the UCLA campus and asking them who was the first president of the United States. They didn't know. The capital of the United States. None of them could answer the question, but they knew who the Kardashian sisters were. They could name all of them. So how in the heck do you get into UCLA when your answer to the question, what's the capital of the United States, say the United States doesn't have a capital or it must be California?
They didn't even know where Hawaii was or what country Hawaii. I saw that.
It's so sad. And so one of the things is it's making it easier, having all this come to light. Sometimes you have to really wait for enough exposure for people to see what's going on. And parents are starting to say, I don't think I'm going to mortgage my house and use half of my retirement funds to send my kid to Harvard so that he or she can become an idiot like those people. And that's exactly what's happening.
I totally agree with that. I just had a conversation with somebody the other day, you know, because even at the high school level, kids are bored. There's so much stress when it comes to social media, social pressure, sexual anxiety, gender anxiety, all of these things. And you're so right. Like, oh, let's just put them in a room and play with dolls and eat jelly beans. Doesn't solve any of those those problems. And those problems are surfaced by the system in itself. I mean, by the time you're in eighth grade, you have learned all fundamentals and should be shifting into some sort of a trade or the career of your choice, so that it is interesting and you're making progress. Instead of, I feel like in our system right now, it's a stop go. And I mean, yeah, you learn geometry in high school, but does everybody use that? No. So unless you're going to need to use it for your profession, why are we just buying time to really, I feel like it's just buying time to indoctrinate them even more on what the system wants, because we absolutely are breeding morons. Absolutely. I have six kiddos and I just had to tell my 9-year-olds the other day, not everybody is going to like you, and that's okay. You don't need to appease everybody. Like, you need to be who you are and, you know, grow and be comfortable when somebody doesn't like you.
Yeah. Well, I think I'll disagree with you just a tiny little bit. I do think that kids need to learn math and they need to learn science. And this is part of critical thinking and problem solving and learning how to learn. It's a process of learning how to learn. The problem is that the schools don't do that anymore. In other words, for one thing, this was going on even before the fake pandemic, but it's accelerated with the fake pandemic. You don't have to demonstrate that you've learned anything. You can just pass. So we're graduating people who have spent time in what's called an academic environment and haven't learned anything. But I also fault parents. In our business, we deal with a lot of families, and sometimes the kids are overweight and or sick. And it is astounding to me the number of parents who don't understand at all the fundamental purpose of parents. And I have said, I say it a few hundred times a year, your child doesn't need a tall friend. Your child needs a parent, mm-hmm. All right? So you're going to decide what food is served in the family, and you're going to make decisions about the stuff. So to a certain extent, we've had a societal abdication, while parents have been happy to drop their kids off at 6 o'clock in the morning and pick them up at 9 o'clock at night and have the school occupy them, which has always been a bad idea. Where people just stopped paying attention to what was going on around them to see the complete and total decay and destruction of our rights and everything else. So this has been a big wake-up call. And I've been telling parents there is no possible way, there's no safety in a public school. If you're interested in safety, you get your kid out. If you're interested in academics, you get your kid out. And if you're interested in making sure that this child turns into a responsible person who's prepared to go out and make something of himself or herself, you got to get them out, because these schools are not interested in any of that anymore. What they are interested in and what they spend their time and energy and resources on is separating the family, getting control of those kids, keeping them moving, 12 to 18 hours a day without any parental involvement. Parents are just irritants now, and teaching them nothing. So the most encouraging thing, one of the most encouraging things I think that has happened is that the homeschool business or market has just exploded. They've successfully chased 5 million more students from the schools because of their behavior. Yeah. And if the parents are smart, they'll make it 25 million.
Well, and now they're having teacher shortages. Teachers don't even want to teach anymore.
Well, they weren't teaching. The teaching profession is just like the medical profession. You know, if you have 1 million doctors licensed in this country, which is I think the estimate, I would be willing to bet half of my net worth that fewer than 25,000 of them know how to think and actually show up for work every day and have an interest in what's going on and in their patients and in making a difference and doing the right thing.
Agreed.
In the teaching profession, you got even more people. And I would bet that the percentage is tiny, just the same thing. It's a tiny, tiny percentage of people who even know how to teach. You know, teaching has become a profession that people go into. It's a political movement.
They won't let you teach at school. I was a teacher for a substitute teacher for a year, and they gave you this curriculum. And if you didn't do it the way that they said and you tried to actually teach a child, and it actually was pattern interrupt, because everything was in 15-minute intervals, and you couldn't even get a point across. It was maddening, and I didn't continue on doing anything with the education system after I saw it.
It's just complete. All of the institutions that our society counts on, government, medicine, media, schools, are completely collapsing. And I take no pleasure in telling you that and in talking about it,
right.
Other than I don't know that this could be fixed any other way. I said in my book that as long as I've been a thinking adult, people have been talking about reforming government, reforming education, reforming the healthcare system. Everybody wants to talk about reform, and every year it gets worse. Well, it can't get much worse than it is right now, and some of it's getting better, mainly because by getting to this low point, more and more people are seeing just how bad it is. And sometimes that's what you have to do, is really show the depth of the problem in order to motivate people to do something about it. So I have very positive expectations of what's going to happen with this. I don't have a negative view of the potential outcome, but we are in for an enormously greater period of pain and suffering, much worse than what we've seen for the last 2.5 years before we get to the other side of it.
I agree with you. And I go to your website, Make Americans Free Again, so the plural's there. And you're involved in law, you're involved in schools, you have duplication to me, groups all over the United States. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Yes. I'll go back to when we started, where we thought the best opportunity was to solve this problem was through the courts. The legislative branch is useless. They've done nothing, for the most part, at the federal and at the state level. And people think that, gosh, life in Florida is swell. Well, it's swell right now because DeSantis is the governor. But if he's not the governor, there are no laws in Florida that prohibit the same thing from happening
That's
in
right.
Florida when somebody else is in charge that happened in California or Oregon or
Washington.
New York, right? Washington State. So the bottom line is that the legislatures are useless. The executive branch has pretty much gone off the rails. And so you're left with the courts. And people rightfully say, there are bad courts and bad judges, and that's true. But there are good courts and good judges, and we're winning. And there are also bad lawyers and bad lawsuits. There are two things that if I were the queen of the universe and I could wave my magic wand and solve, I would. The first thing is I would stop this pants-on-fire people running around who are just angry, and I get that, but they're just waving their fists in the air and wasting a lot of energy. They don't get anything done, and that leads to another problem, which is hurry up and file, and we've just got a lot of bad lawsuits. It's so bad that an organization I won't mention here, but I think everybody would recognize the name, filed a lawsuit in New York on a case we've already won, filed a similar lawsuit and lost it. Okay, now, I mean, it's beyond comprehension. Not only did you not need to do it, but if you were going to do it, you should cite the case we won instead of destroying what we already spent a lot of money getting done, right? So the reason I say that is that many people who are sour on the courts really don't realize how much incompetent legal action has been taken. Mm-hmm. We've gotten very aggressive, for example, in defending doctors and their licenses, and I would say that in most cases, what has been done on their behalf by bad lawyers is worse than if the doctor had just waited for his license to be revoked and we could come in and fix it. That's how bad the lawyers are, right? So anyway, we had a different strategy. We were going to do this crazy thing called interviewing the lawyers, choosing our lawyers very carefully, working from a strategy. I know that's heresy in the health freedom business, where pants on fire is the order of the day. But we're going to have a strategy. We're going to carefully consider what we take on. We're going to get teams of lawyers who become experts in certain areas of law and work together to get better and better at it, and then start filing lawsuits that way and paying them. That's another thing too. This fantastical idea that there's some team of lawyers out there going to work for free for the next 10 years while their kids and their spouses live in a car, we have to get rid of that idea too, because it's just plain stupid. So we pay our lawyers, we get good ones, we make them part of the team, we work from a strategic standpoint, and that's why we've been winning. So there are several little subtitles of the things that we get into. One is these groups, and the original reason why I started my group and why we were going to build groups was to raise the hundreds of millions of dollars that it's going to cost to solve the problem. But what happened, and I saw this in my group right away, is the groups became what people need to survive this on a day-to-day basis. So back in 2020, people were meeting new friends, and they were finding out about a church that stayed open, and they could find out where you can go for coffee without a mask. And we had a very aggressive mentoring program to match experienced homeschool parents with new parents who needed help. We started rescuing small businesses. The government has a plan for Walmart to stay open, but not to rescue the athletic shoe store that's owned by a single owner out on Hamilton Road. So we've got involved in those things. So we're gradually reweaving the fabric of our community. Today, the issues are a little bit different. Food prices and food shortages are an issue. So most of our groups have community gardens. Ours is 6 acres. We're growing enough food to make sure nobody in our group starves, no matter what happens, and also to make sure that we can feed a lot of other people who maybe aren't planning ahead like we are. So the groups are very, very, this is where people find their tribe, and everybody's life has been rearranged enough that most of us have had to find a new tribe, and we've also been able to navigate life during these very difficult times. And then I mentioned a very big initiative. We're getting very aggressive in this. We're going to raise $100 million just to defend health professionals, doctors, nurses, nurse practitioners, unlicensed professionals, anybody who's being attacked by licensure boards for what they do. And they're coming out of the woodwork. I mean, I had said last year at this time, the tab for getting the doctors out of trouble who are already in trouble was probably 50 million. I bet that number now is 100 million. So it's a lot of work to do. It's an enormously expensive proposition. But what we're talking about is just essentially saving our country and saving ourselves by doing these things.
Yeah, we did. I know you were involved in Dr. Gosselin's case, and we did do a full story on that in the August edition. Can you talk a little bit about that case?
Yeah, and Dr. Gosselin's case was very representative of what we see all the time. So his license had been revoked for a variety of reasons, mostly for writing vaccine exemptions. Mm-hmm. What normally happens, and for anybody listening to this, is I'll give you some advice. Doctors and health professionals will often find an administrative law specialist, and these are people who've done work for the state. That should make you a little bit nervous just as I said that, but they're supposed to be experts in this area of law, and they generally don't defend doctors very well. They're all about making a deal. Fortunately, Gosselin was smart enough not to do that, and he knew he needed help. So we invested over $60,000 in Dr. Gosselin's case. And what we did is we took a very aggressive stance. We made the board sit through days of hearings. You know, they're used to like a 2-hour hearing, and they've already made up their mind what they're going to do. And we made it clear. We made a couple things clear when this was going on. One, we're going to get a chance to present all the information we have about what happened to this guy and what's going on. The second thing is, if we lost at the local level, we were happy to take it to court. The third thing is, if they went after any doctors who were weighing in on his behalf, that we would take them on as clients and we would do the same thing for them. So this board was sort of between a rock and a hard spot. They really didn't want to get into the court system. They really didn't want to do this 7 times, because I think we occupied him for a full week.
Yeah, so they
restored his license. They restored Dr. Gosselin's license, and it was without the usual rigmarole of expensive CMEs, and you have to pay for the board investigation and all that sort of thing. It was very quietly done, because they were, I think they wish they hadn't gotten themselves into it. We have another case in Oregon, a doctor whose license was revoked, and we actually have a lawsuit against the medical board and all the board members individually and personally on behalf of that doctor. We intend to do more of that, too. We've got to take the fun and sport out of this, so enough of these medical board members find themselves being sued for tens of millions of dollars, they might not think this is so much fun anymore.
Yeah, we've seen that in our in some of our schools. Parents coming together and actually potentially suing them individually mm-hmm. for their decision making. And I think you're right on that. That makes a huge difference when you're not protected as a group, that now you're going to individually be responsible for your decision.
Right. And the standard is pretty high for that, by the way. But there's a silver lining in every cloud. And one of the silver linings that we're seeing in some of the egregious behavior is that it used to be a lot more subtle, and so the penalties weren't so terrible. That was kind of good. But the other side of it is they stayed just on the inside of this line over here where you could kind of get away with it. But now what they're doing is so egregious that we have a very good chance of prevailing in court. And another thing, too, some of these people, if they're holding any kind of public office or agency position or whatever, they have to be bondable. And I'm convinced that we are in the process of making them some of these people unable to hold these positions because no bonding agency is going to take on that responsibility. So there are a lot of ways to do this, but I think the biggest thing is you have to, I go back to, again, having a strategy and organizing yourself and running it like a business. And just my background prior to healthcare was being with a direct sales organization company out of Tennessee. I worked for really, really smart people. I mean, this was a big company, and the people who owned it were super smart. And I learned how to build big things, and I learned how to organize things. And so, which is the opposite of what I keep mentioning, this pants on fire. We're just going to run around and scream about the injustice of it all, and we'll sign a petition, and we'll go downtown and protest. And none of that makes any difference.
It doesn't.
I mean, if you're lonesome, go to a protest. And if you're staring at the wall reading a magazine thinking you're going to go mad, then get online and sign some petitions. But it's fantastical thinking to think that you're going to stop what we're talking about with those ideas. And they've been going on for decades. That's why I left the health freedom movement in 2008. I've never seen people with such a high tolerance for failure and the absolute insistence on continuing to do the same failed strategies again and again. I'm in this to win it, and if we're not going to win it, I'm just going home, right? So just a very aggressive stance and applying strategy to what you're doing is the very, very important part of this.
Yeah, absolutely. We speak at, groups here and there, and the common theme lately has been how people just think they're going to control everything, that somehow they can hide what they're doing and control the next virus or control this or control that. And it's like, no, we're not going to control. We just have to do better individually and as a community, because we're not going to control what they're throwing at us.
And with that, it seems like some people have fallen back asleep this summer. And the groups, you're right, it's pants on fire. We're all over the place. Where do you think we are as a nation, and how can we come together with systems to take action?
Well, I think the first thing is that one of the reasons why the pants on fire and the groups fall apart is because they're not doing anything. All right. When you say, well, how can you say we're not doing anything? We signed a petition. We drafted model legislation. We protested every weekend. I'm telling you that doesn't work. I'm talking about doing something where you win. All right. You cannot expect people to hold together as a group by just keeping them busy.
Yeah.
All right. You have to get something done. So one of the reasons my group actually grew this summer, it didn't contract, and a lot of our groups grew instead of contract, is that we're doing something. Okay, you get a kid out of school, you win. You save a business, you win. You figure out how you're going to live your entire life without masks, and you win. You plant in a community garden, you win. You start teaching people how to can and jar, and we're going to feed the neighbors, you win. So we get a doctor off and we take a new one on, you win. The winning, 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 winning. You have to win. That's how you keep people together. And you have to have structure to the group. This is, again, coming back from my systems background. And if you're going to have a meeting, you have to have a reason to have the meeting. And you have to understand the difference between a following and a working organization. People develop a mailing list and a following, and they think that they're building something. And yeah, I'm fighting for the right for people to do whatever the heck they want to do. But this kind of stuff is not a strategy for solving this problem. So you have to get people together, meeting one-on-one in the same room. We do not permit Zoom and conference call meetings, because how in the heck are you going to drop your kid off at somebody's house that you never met before to babysit because you've got an emergency? No, it's going to be somebody you know really, really well. Hey, Marcia, I've got a problem. Can I drop off Sarah for 2 hours because we have an emergency, right? This is how you build a community of people who are depending on each other and have become dependent on one another. So our groups are growing instead of contracting, even though it appears that things are getting better. They're really not, but the overall appearance for some people is that it's getting better. I think the second thing is that people are all over the place with taking on too many things. I answer at least 25 emails a day saying, I can understand why you're really upset, but that's way outside of our lane. We're not going to get anything done unless we zero in on what we're going to get done and make sure that it's narrow enough that we can succeed at it. So you can't take on all of the issues. If you take on everything, you take on nothing. You got nothing done.
I have a question for you.
Yeah, sure.
Okay, so we do a truth paper. We wanted to change America. The funds are going to go back into building schools and medical clinics and all that good stuff. Do you have a mentorship program for people like us that are trying to do the right thing? And we're gaining footholds and traction, but, you know, but to come together and organize this in the right way with the right system and come together instead of just trying to go rogue.
Well, I don't think it's a matter of trying to go rogue. I think it's a matter of belonging to different groups for different reasons. And I've explained it this way. If I could belong to a Second Amendment's right, Amendment rights group and a book club and my MAFA group, Make Americans Free Again. Now, if I bring my guns to book club, people might get a little prickly. And if I start reading book reports on Thursday night at the Make Americans Free Again meeting, people might get a little prickly. But I discuss books at book club. We go to the shooting range with the Second Amendment rights group, and we do these other activities I've been talking about at MAFA. So I think the key is not trying to figure out how we conglomerate everybody with a mission statement and list of activities that's 14 pages long because now we can hold hands and sing Kumbaya. I don't think that's going to help. I think what is going to help is to say, you guys have decided to build health clinics and to raise money to do that. Okay, so people can contribute to that, to do that. I don't think that that's necessarily something that requires a weekly meeting because building health clinics is a long way off. And by the way, just a clue that I'll give you, if you don't find a way to rein in the expenses, even if they're all populated with alternative practitioners, you'll be bankrupt. I get a phone call every 6 months from somebody who wants to partner with us to build a healthcare system with enlightened, air quotes, around it, healthcare practitioners. And I tell them, well, you know, I don't want to partner with you because you're going to be bankrupt in 3 years mm-hmm. and I'm not going with you. All right.
Yeah.
So, but having said that, assuming you have all the right ideas about it, that's an activity in and of itself. And you need to keep that for yourself. Narrow focus, right? You're going to build health clinics and you need to spend all of your time and energy figuring out how you're going to do it, how you're going to fund it, how you're going to bill for it, how you're going to pay for, you know, just the whole nine yards and how you're going to keep from going down the path that everybody who started the healthcare system goes, which is bankruptcy eventually, unless you're the government and then you print money to cover your tracks, right? So, you know, maybe in addition to that, some of the people associated with your organization join Make Americans Free Again because they want a community garden. They want a mentorship program for getting kids out of school. They want to fund lawsuits and et cetera, et cetera. But I think that the whole idea that we're going to bring all of the things that need to be done under one umbrella, I think it goes to what I said before. You take on everything, you get nothing done.
Right. So I wanted to ask you on, you know, just systems. What is your opinion on trying to create grand juries and militias in our communities?
Waste of time.
Okay.
Waste of time. And that kind of thing is theater. And you have, I'm not very good at sometimes unpopular because I say what I think. You have to differentiate between theatrical productions, you know, so this business, we're going to serve notice on people. So we have a grand jury proceeding and we determine that Mike DeWine is a criminal. I mean, we already know that he is, our governor here, but now what are we going to do? Put him in my basement, build a cell down there? And I mean, seriously, what do you think is going to come of this? And then there's this idea we're going to petition the attorney general to go after these people and serve notice there. Yep, the attorney general is going to sit there and open those envelopes and say, 5,000 people in Ohio want us to investigate DeWine, and he's a member and the leader of our party. I'm going to be on that. I mean, you have to think through the practically how is this going to work, okay?
Right.
And by the way, we're doing this all the time, which is why we take on this case, but we don't take on that case, because you have to say, you know, by the way, everybody's talking about the scenario planning these people did, you know, Event 201 and the Rockefeller thing.
Yeah, they
That's
did
what
lots
they did.
Of planning. Planning,
yeah,
planning,
they did lots
planning.
Of planning. And then what happens
yes.
on our side, and this is why I walked away from this in 2008, it made my head hurt, all right? let's have a grand jury. Okay, great idea. Okay, where are we going to have it? All right, we'll just get all these people together. Let's send things to the Attorney General. Yep, let's do that. Now we're going to go serve notice on the council. So it's so easy to just get everybody like the rallying pants on fire, you know, let's go, and not really thinking through what's going to happen. You know?
Well, Pam, our time is getting short with you. Can you please, I know that you have so much going on, so we have about a minute and a half. Can you please tell people where they can go to get more information about the things that you're doing and how they can help you?
Absolutely. First of all, I put out a newsletter every week and 4 videos. It's free. You want to be a subscriber, send me an email at pampopper@msn.com. You're a healthcare practitioner, and you want your rights protected, you want to be protected legally, send me an email, pampopper@msn.com. You want to start a meeting, I hold conference calls regularly, how you can get involved with us, same email address. You can go to makeamericansfreeagain.com and look at our website, lots of stuff there. To consider getting involved, and if everybody gets involved and does their part, this is a solvable problem.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Well, we thank you so much. I hope that people listening can just be able to find their part and find their place. And once you know what your part is and your place is, get the right information. Pam, you definitely are, you know, paving the way of experience. And so I hope that people take your advice and get activated, because that's truly what we need is activation.
I agree with you're brilliant. And thank you for coming on.
God bless you.
Thank you,
Pam,
for having me. Thank you so much. You guys have a great day.
You too.
You too.
Bye-bye.
You too. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Big announcement. Steve, the producer, has a new book called Breaking the Deception Code, A True Seeker's Guide to the Discernment. It is now available. If there's a singular problem facing the world today, as we've just been a witness and to our last guest, it's a lack of discernment reflected in the billions of ignorant people choosing to align themselves with dark forces intent on destroying them physically, mentally, financially, and spiritually. The solution is learning how to have discernment. There's no better way than to buy my book, Breaking the Deception Code, A True Seeker's Guide to Discernment. You can find it on all online booksellers.
This is the part of the show we call our weekly word of encouragement, where we take a few minutes to reflect back and share what God has been doing in our lives. But before we share with you, I want to remind everyone to subscribe to The Flame Paper, our companion publication. It's as simple as going to theflameusa.com and going up to the subscribe button. The other thing is when you subscribe, you are not just spreading the truth like wildfire, you're funding good. And we're coming up with an affiliate program. And please share with your friends to subscribe too. We need to get this out. Well, let me see here. Our verse of the week is Mark 6:4. And Jesus said to them, "A prophet is not without honor, except in his own town, among his relatives, and in his own home." So a prophet is not without honor except in his own hometown. So, Anna, what has God been teaching you this week?
Oh, geez. Well, I think being a prophet is, you know, a huge responsibility, spreading God's word, spreading God's truth. And I think that reading this verse is it's confusing in some ways, right? Because we know that our community is most important. We know our homes are most important. But we also have more responsibility than that. And just talking with Pam Popper, one of the things that she said is you have to win, right? And I was really thinking about that. We have to win. And it wasn't like we have to win collectively or whatever, but what you're doing has to be something that will win in the end.
Ends in a
positive result.
Yep.
And so it just reminds me that the Flame, our job is to educate people, to inform people, because that is one of the largest things missing is informed consent. I mean, we saw that with all of the vaccines and things like that. It's like, you know what? We live in the United States of America. We are free to make our own choice. And when we have informed consent. So when
critical thinking.
And when informed consent isn't allowed, then now we're not given a choice. We not even just the mandates, but just in general, because all the information wasn't available to us. And so I just hope, you know, we each individually need to find our strong suits and the things that we're interested in and the things that we can empower ourselves and other people to win. And so I know for the Flame, that's to inform. And because we are a ministry, we're also able to fund. And so I think that the paper allows us to be a prophet outside of our neighborhoods, but also that it is important for us to be activated in whatever's going to win.
What I was seeing is we are involved in groups, and when Jesus went, people didn't take him seriously because they were so used to him. Mm-hmm. And so that's why he had to leave his hometown. He couldn't perform miracles there because people didn't take him serious. Well, when people get used to us giving free papers, which we'll continue to do and we'll work in our community, but as leaders, they just see us as, oh, there's Anna and Nicole. And it's in the hometown is what I'm saying. Nationally, we have a lot of respect and we have a lot of great guests and these awesome things happen. But in our circles, like even with my kids, you know, they don't see me. They see me as mom, not as a person that does a truth paper that's expanding nationally, that has great guests on their show, that collects articles. You know, we're winning because we've been given honor and favor. But the people close to us don't always see that. That's what I see Jesus went through in his hometown.
Do you think sometimes that our families and friends are there as an anchor to keep us level-headed?
Possibly.
And to keep us down here and not big-headed?
Humble.
Like Paul had to have a thorn in his flesh to keep him humble?
Are you calling our families a thorn in our flesh?
No. I think maybe they
are. You saying we're big-headed?
Yeah. What are you saying, Steve?
Yeah, I think you understand what I'm saying.
I'm just playing.
I think a lot of people, I face the same thing every day. I just wrote a book. I've spent countless hours, and I got some friends, and they're buying it now, and they're reading it and stuff. But the fact is, it's like, I just keep my mouth shut around people, because if I start going deep, they don't get it. It would shatter their lives. And so I have to allow people the fact that most people don't want their lives shattered, and that's what Pam was talking about. They want to stay in a stuck situation. Our job is to find those who do want to be open, and that's what Jesus has done. That's what Christianity has been from day one. It's always the remnant. It's never been the masses.
Well, and I think that a lot of times people feel stuck because they don't know what they can do. Everything's too big. So anyway, we're nearing the end of our show, and it was such a blessing to have Pam on. As I like to say, I'm Anna Kane.
I'm Nicole Orozco.
And I'm Steve, the producer, Johan, reminding you to keep your tinder dry, your torch lit, as together with God's help, we're spreading the truth like wildfire.
My fear to stand where I'm afraid. I am through with this, 'cause I am more than this.